Du suchst fundiertes Wissen und sachliche Diskussionen? Dann ist BGT das Falsche für dich. Viel Spaß mit der Board Game Theory.
Ja, hallo liebe Hörenden da draußen in den Endgeräten. Schön, dass ihr wieder eingeschaltet habt zur Board Game Theory. Heute wie immer nicht alleine, nämlich mit dabei ist der Olli. Hi Olli.
Moin moin.
Und noch mit dabei, aber das hört ihr noch nicht, ist der gute Adam Karpinski, den der ein oder andere, die ein oder andere von euch bestimmt schon mal auf irgendeiner größeren Schachtel eines Brettspiels gesehen hat. Ja, bekannt für so Brecher wie Lord of Hellas, Nemesis, Dark Ages, Terracotta Army,
Frostpunk,
auch so ein Ding, ne? Genau. Alles recht große Spiele, aber insgesamt ein sehr umtriebiger Designer auf jeden Fall. Und ja, wir hatten heute, also haben wir es jetzt gerade eben aufgenommen, das Interview über Insta Live bei Olli auf dem Insta-Account. Total spannend, hatten die große Ehre, mit dem Adam über sein aktuelles Buch zu reden, was da läuft, nicht Olli?
Genau. Da hatte mich Sport and Dice, die verlegen das ja, angeschrieben, ob ich da Lust hätte, so ein Live mit Adam zu machen. Da habe ich gesagt, wie Lust? Ja, klar. genau, und die Kampagne läuft gerade auf GameFound, das heißt Board Games on My Mind. Und da geht es eben um Spieledesign, also wie er so an die ganze Sache rangeht. Ich hatte da schon letztes Jahr in Essen das erste Kapitel so zum Probelesen bei Board and Dice auch bekommen und das liest sich sehr, sehr interessant und ich bin sehr gespannt auf das Buch.
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Das ist ja auch, was wir jetzt dann nach einem Interview dann auch nochmal erfahren werden, aber so vorab, also ein paar die Eckdaten. Das Buch gibt es ja schon was länger. Der Adam meinte, er hat das in der Pandemie geschrieben und auf Polnisch ist das auch schon länger veröffentlicht. Und die Crowdfunding-Kampagne ist jetzt quasi, um es auf Englisch herauszubringen. Ja. Was hat er noch gesagt? Das ist im Grunde so dreigeteilt. Der erste Teil ist so theoretische Grundlagen, so aus seinem Uni-Background noch ein bisschen Theorie sich da abgearbeitet, was wohl ganz cool war. Der zweite Teil ist ja über das Game Design selbst und der dritte dann, wie man mit Publishern redet. Genau, und im Interview, was auf Englisch ist, deswegen hier so kurz vorab die Einsortierung, ja, reden wir über das Buch, über allgemein Game Design, wie er daran geht, wie so seine Meinung ist, wie er verschiedene Sachen löst, wie die Publisher auf ihn zukommen, wie er mit Publishern redet, ein bisschen Crowdfunding, wie relevant das für ihn ist.
Game-Testing.
Genau, Playtesting, ein wichtiger Teil natürlich, auch so wie sich Live-Playtesting und über Tabletop-Simulator oder dergleichen da verhält, was man für unterschiedliche Möglichkeiten hat. Genau, wie gesagt, ist auf Englisch. Ich fand, man kann es sehr gut verstehen. Vielleicht muss man dann den Podcatcher dann auf einfache Geschwindigkeit stellen zur Not, aber ansonsten konnte man ihm gut folgen, fand ich.
Ich hätte jetzt noch gesagt, Grüße an Ray, dem würden wir es vielleicht auch noch übersetzen, aber Ray mag ja generell keine Interviews.
Genau,
trotzdem daher Grüße Ray. An ihn, ob er überhaupt in diese Folge reinhört. Meld dich doch mal, Ray, wenn du das jetzt gehört hast.
Sehr gut. Ja, ansonsten, Olli, würde ich sagen, dann fängt jetzt hier das Interview an und viel Spaß dabei. Ja, dann hören wir das danach nochmal für die Verabschiedung.
Hello, Dirk.
Hi, Olli. Thanks for having me. But I'm not the guest for today.
No. Here is Adam. Hello, Adam.
Okay, hello. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Adam. Yeah.
So, first of all, a short introduction. Welcome, everybody that is already in this live. I hope a few more people will join. Today, I'm here together with my colleague Dirk from the Board Game Theory podcast. And we have a very special guest today. It's Adam Karpinski. Very, very great board game designer from my perspective, known for games like Nemesis, Lord of Hellas, Dark Ages, and so on and so on. And he wrote a book now about board game design. Yeah. And that is why we have him here today. And we want to talk with him about this. So, yeah, welcome, everybody. We will also use this interview for our podcast, which is normally in German. So besides the interview, we will have an episode where we translate the interview a bit, in general, talk about you and your book, Adam. And in the podcast, we always begin when we have a guest with three questions, which are always the same. And the first question is, why board games?
Okay, the quick answer is why not? But truly, I love any kind of games, and I mean, for me, it's not important if I play board game, tabletop RPG, video game, even sports, different kind of sports. I just love game as a medium, game as a interactive thing when we can make our own choices, and you know, it depends how we play, and this is what decide about who win, who lose, or how the story unfolds. So I think I stick with the board games because they are I would say they are more primal to other kind of games. Yeah, board games are very, very old. The oldest one have like 6,000 of years, and one of the oldest is Mancala, or game of Ur. And we keep playing them, even those games. If we play Mancala today, this is still a really good game. So I think this board games are very clear when we think about designing them. You have access to everything. The rules are visible for every player. It's not like with video game, for example, or not like in sport when you need referee mostly to decide about some conflicts. So I think this is why board games.
Great answer, I would say. Then the second question is normally one that people are a bit struggling with. It's what are your current top three board games?
Oh, yeah. I understand why that's a struggle for many people. And yeah, for me, probably it's also a little problematic because, of course, it changed a little, but I have many games that I really like, and I think still in my top three there is a special place for Through the Ages, because I think this is one of the most important thing, most important game in our industry, and really the way that Vlada Chvátil give us civilization game and bring very similar experience to the video game of Sid Meier was great, and I'm still envy. I still try to design my own civilization game, and it is hard. So it makes this game even better when I look at Through the Ages. I think also from last years, I have quite a long episode playing Feast of Odin, and I love this game, really. Nobody want to play this with me, but but I love it. And this is a game I play solo, and I normally don't play solo because I like interaction and competitive games. So yeah, Feast of Odin, even solo, is good for me. And the something newer this year, I have opportunity to play Spirit Island for the first time. And again, I'm not a fan of cooperations, but this game is really, really good. It's really great design, and I love many solutions from that game. So yeah, this can be my top three for now.
Three great choices, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And the last introduction question is, what player color do you choose, if you can?
Mostly yellow. And I choose yellow because I have some problems with color blindness. And yellow is is always the brightest color on the table, so I see where my pieces are. And if not yellow, I play white or black, because obviously those colors I always see.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for answering those questions and getting us started here a little bit. So yeah, Oli already mentioned it. You're writing a book currently. So the first question, is it already finished, or are you still in the writing process? Are there still things you have to finish up, or is it done?
The book is done. It looks like this. This is the fourth edition of the book.
Yeah.
So I write it in the first year of pandemic,
okay.
I think, and it was published in Poland year after that, and now there is a crowdfunding campaign on GameFound to make it English edition, edition of the book. So.
And the GameFound campaign is already running, and you're almost got the goal, right?
We started yesterday, and we are close to 70%, I think, something like this. So it's going quite well.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations for this one. That's for the organizational part of that you're writing a book and where you can get it. But more importantly, what is the book about? And can you maybe, to start it off, describe it in one sentence, what this book is about? Yeah, sorry.
You know, the truth about me is that I don't know about nothing about marketing. I'm not a good seller, you know. When really, when I show my game to a publisher, for example, I try to not speak very long, because longer I speak, the worse experience they have. So I try to bring the game as fast as possible on the table, let them play, and then fortunately they have much better experience than listening to me when I try to pitch the game to them. So with the book, it's also problematic, because this is a book about my perspective of game design and how I see games overall. The first part of the book is a little philosophical, I think, and there is I will say academic parts, because I work for a while on university, and this is what is still in me. And after that, I try to focus on the whole process from the designer perspective. So how it starts, what means that you have idea for the game, and what is the whole process, how to manage the process, and how to manage yourself into the process, because this is also very, very important in any creative work, I think, because there will be ups and downs during the process, and it can be frustrating, especially designing a game is not a very short journey. So you have to prepare to many different emotions during the process. Especially, you will quite a lot use trash bin to put your prototype there, because it's not what you want, and you start over and over again.
Yep.
This is how it works. So, the biggest part of the book is about that. And the last one, the third part, is about getting your game published. How to pitch it to, how to find publisher, how to pitch the game to your publisher, how to work with the agreements, royalties, and all that more formal stuff, let's say.
Okay, very interesting. So it's not just one perspective on the whole topic, but you basically have three perspectives on its three parts. And I think we didn't mention the name or the title of the book yet. So it's called Board Games on My Mind, correct?
Yes.
And what I notice about this title and even the cover, I would say it's quite different from other how-to guides you find when you're Googling for designing board game books. As I understood from your description now, it's not your typical how-to guide, do these 10 things and then you're a great designer. So it's is there a lot of your personal approach in it?
Yeah, I just, I don't believe in those recipes when you get the book, read the book, and I'm the best designer in the world. No, that's not how it works. Maybe in video games, when you read a book, you get some skill points immediately, but in real world, it doesn't work like this. It's more about showing my perspective and maybe give people some food for thoughts for their own. Because I think each designer during his or her career will create their own method, and I just share mine. This is what I can do, and. I think people can read it, can agree in some points, disagree in others, but it's great because it can bring new ideas to their head, and this is the most important part of it.
Okay, thanks. Talking about ideas and bringing things to life, so I would imagine designing a board game is quite different from writing a book, anyhow, could you translate any of your skills you acquired as a board game designer to writing the book?
I think some of skills are similar, or maybe not the skills itself, but your attitude have to be a little similar, because designing a game and writing a book takes some time. You have to be patient during that. You have to, forgive yourself if you have a bad day and you cannot write even a one sentence, because there will be a next day when you write 10 or 20 pages. And that's okay. This is how it works. When you don't work, when you literally don't sit before the laptop and put new line of text, this isn't mean that you are not working, because you're still thinking about the book, you're still thinking how to write different things, and this part is very important in writing a book and in designing games, I think. But of course, I have a little experience with writing a book, because this is the one and only book I have wrote, and this is not story book with characters and plot and all that stuff. So I think it was a little easier for me to write about something that I'm doing for like 10 or 12 years.
Okay, nice. And vice versa, did you acquire any new skills while writing this book? Did you pick up some things that you can take back when designing board games?
Oh yeah, I think I really learn a lot, and this is funny because I'm not sure if anybody can learn something from this book, truly, but I'm sure that I have learned when I was writing this book. And I learned about game design, because when you have to, put your thoughts in a specific order and write it down, it changed everything. It's like I think the comparison will be when you have a idea for the game and when you have to sit and write the rules, this is totally different story. And when you write the when you are writing the rules, you see so many gaps in what you have in your head. And this is exactly the same. I have some thoughts in my head and I was, oh, this is a brilliant thing. But no, when I write it down, it was like, oh man, who that came up with that idea? It's not complete. It's have many gaps and rethink again what you was thinking. And so I learned a lot about game design, and I also learned a lot about writing, especially when I work with the editor of the book. Małgorzata Bodyczka edited the book with me, and yeah, it was a lot of work because, as you can hear now, I talk a lot and I also write a lot. So,
okay, yeah.
So her job was mostly, okay, make it shorter. Okay, those means nothing. Read of it. And yeah, I think the book is readable because of her. Mostly.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for those insights on creating the book. So, Oli, you have some more questions, I guess?
Yeah, indeed. As we were speaking already about designing games, how do you there normally approach a new project?
It depends. Mostly there are two ways because nowadays, of course, there are publishers or people who wants me to design a game. Yeah, they give me, sometimes they give me a specification, what game they want. Sometimes, no, they just want a great game. And this is the harder part when somebody came to you and say, okay, it's no matter what the game will be, it should be just great. It will be great if it will be so good as Nemesis. Yeah, this is what some people tell me. This is especially funny when somebody outside the industry contact me and they know something about the board games, but not too much. So they want to me to design, you know, something like Monopoly to play by everybody, but also a little like Nemesis. And I'm okay, it will be not possible. No idea how to do this. But of course, people from the industry in most cases know what they want or what kind of game they want, and this is one way to make it. And the other way is that I just start designing a game because I have some idea. I try to make a prototype, and after that, I'm looking for a publisher.
Okay,
sounds good. My next question would have been how you, and this could maybe fit a bit into this request from the publisher, how you connect theme and mechanics. So when you get a request for a game, is that then that the publisher says, I want a game with that theme or a game with that mechanic, or can it be both? Or
it depends. It depends. I think mostly they nowadays, mostly is some IP the publisher have and want to make a game about that IP. I think the last example of mine was Frostpunk. It was that situation. Yeah, they came to me and say, okay, we will be doing Frostpunk, and can you design a game? A game about this, bring the video game experience to the table. But sometimes, and it's it also happens, publisher just came to me and said, okay, we want a city building with dice. Have you any idea how to do it? And this was the way I designed Origins, for example. And it was just one of the testing meeting in Board and Dice, and Kuba with Andre talk with me, maybe game with dice and with the city building, because they like games like this. So I was, okay, let's try. I will, if I have something, I will bring it to you. And that's how it happens. So in my opinion, there is no a big difference, because no matter on which edge you start, mechanic and team have to be very close to each other, and one have to fit another. This is very important. I try to look at games in a holistic way, because I think team helps even what we call the Euro games. If your game have a good team, it will help this game.
Absolutely, absolutely. Then talking about how you come to new ideas, I would say that there cannot be creativity in isolation, and there's always a kind of interaction with other creations out there. How do you pick these interactions and find new ideas?
I think what you said is very close to what I believe, because I think we have fit our brain, and we have fit our brain with other cultural worlds. With other medium, it's not important that if we go to the cinema, to the theater, or we listen to the music. That's not important. What we choose, important is that each work, each experience like this brings something new to our head, and when those things collide in our brain, we can create something new, and this is how it works. And of course, playing other board games have the same influence.
Great. And Dirk, I would hand over to you again.
Yeah, speaking about still at the topic of games, for quite obvious reasons. So randomness seems to be more and more a topic in the hobby. Some people love it, some people hate it, especially you already mentioned the Eurogames kind of avoid randomness. Still, randomness brings variety and a certain aspect of the unknown into a game. How do you personally deal with randomness? And I know there's a part in the book dealing with randomness as well, so maybe you have some interesting insights for us.
I think randomness is one of the ideas in board game that is demonized by people, because people can write, oh, this game is very random, and for many people this means the game is bad, but it doesn't work like this. We have a lot of games with randomness, and we don't feel that randomness. We still feel that our choices decide, not the rolling a die or drawing a card from the deck. So it depends how you use randomness. It depends what kind of randomness you use, because we have what we call pre-luck and post-luck, or pre-random and post-random. And this is totally different thing. Of course, in some genres, post-luck is also good, and we can add that kind of randomness to the game, especially when we talk about adventure game. and cooperative games. This can be okay. But for example, in many Euro games, we have a lot of free randomness. It's mostly seen in the setup of a game. And yeah, what this randomness give us is just replay ability. Yeah. So it depends what kind of randomness you want to use. And what is also important, you have to understand how randomness will work with your game, because we can talk even about I don't know, Texas Hold'em, yeah, popular version of poker. It is very random, that's true, but still the game have very very big space for players' decisions, and it makes the game really good. So the game is not about having better cards than others. It's about bidding, and it shows that you can put even a lot of randomness into a game, and this will be still more a game of skill than a game of luck.
Okay, yeah, very nice insights on the topic of randomness, and I totally agree. It's sometimes demonized this word randomness. Maybe in a similar direction. Nowadays, I often hear the word streamlined when talking about game design, that modern games are streamlined, and there's a lot of things that are cut away, and I don't think it's generally a bad thing, but maybe sometimes there's cut too much away and you lose the character of the game. And especially with, so to be honest, I didn't play all of your games. I played some of them. And I find always they are streamlined, but they still have character and some edges. And maybe some people would say, that's not streamlined enough, but for me, I think you keep them in it. How do you think about this, to keep this character alive?
You know, I think, again, there is a little misunderstanding when we talk about streamlined.
Yeah.
Because I hear it a lot from some publishers that mm-hmm. they want game to be as simple to bring on the table as possible. But first of all, when we look at the Board Game Geek, I don't know, top 100, there is not many streamlined games or the easiest game. We have some of them that are not very complicated when we talk about rules, but you know, first 10 is quite heavy games. So I believe what is more important in game is elegance, and elegance is something that is kind of tension between complexity, and I mean complexity of the rules, and yes, the depth of the game. Because you can add another rule to your game, but only when it will give a much more interesting choices for players. So if you create greater deepness because of that new rule, that can be good. But if you add a rule just to, I don't know, for two cards you create in your game, you need a new rule, it's probably not good idea. So again, we can use an example of classic games, chess and Go. In Go, we have very simple rules. It's much simpler than chess to learn the rules of Go, but Go is still more deep game.
Yeah.
So you have to keep balance on this, and trying to cut out all rules that are not really important to your game, but you cannot cut out everything because we will be creating the same game again and again the industry.
Yeah, I totally agree on stop using the term streamlined and make more use of the word elegance. I like it a lot. Yeah. So thanks for those insights.
Yeah, before I continue, I have just from one of our watchers, it's from a guy we know, Carsten's Board Games. He just wanted to greet you and tell you that Nemesis and Terracotta Army are two of his most famous games, and he's very much looking forward to your book and also to the new Nemesis.
great. Thanks for that. And this is interesting because people who like Terracotta Army in opinion of many people are not the same people who like Terracotta Army. We have totally different games. So yeah, thanks again.
Okay, let's continue. So I think a very important part of game design is also playtesting. How do you deal with this?
You know, playtesting for me is it looks totally different on different stages of designing a game. I like to say that first, when I start designing a game, before even first playtest, I really don't need playtesters with the feedback, because when I play my game for the first time, it's new for me, and I will get so many information from the game itself that my head will be full of new ideas and full of things that I think should be corrected in the game and so on. So when I play first time, it's mostly I just need people who sit on the table and try to play my game. Because first I have to know what the game wants to be. Is it even a good game, or I want to put it in the box and never come back to it? It depends. So this is the first stage. The second stage is when I want a fresh look. And on this stage, I mostly played with my close friends who also design games or work in the industry. So people who can give me a lot of overall thoughts about my game that I didn't see before. So I want to different perspective, but on this stage I want mostly designer perspective. And after that, of course, I try to make this group wider, and then I listen to feedback of players, and I also observe them, because I think when you run a playtest, the more important thing is to watch than to listen, because when testers give you a feedback, there is many different things that influence them. For example, they can like you or they don't like you, and it will have some influence. Or I don't know, they have bad moods that day, or anything. It can be anything, but what you can see during the gameplay, it's very, very important, because, for example, if somebody watch his or her phone constantly during the gameplay, probably you have a problem. The question I love to ask after the playtest is how long the playtest was. Without looking at the watch, I ask people what they think, how many minutes, hours they sit and play. And this is funny, because if people are engaged in something, the time runs faster.
Yeah.
So if they after I don't know, 3 hours of playing Nemesis, they said, oh, I don't know, it was like 40 minutes. I know it's okay. I'm on the very good spot because they are not bored. Yeah, this is literally what I get from that feedback. And of course, there is the other side of this. So when I test 5 minute game and somebody, oh, it was like 1 hour, I know I probably don't want to bring that game anytime.
Interesting. Now, as you mentioned, this watching is more important than listening. I think especially during the pandemic, a lot of playtesting happened online on Tabletop Simulator and so on. But that sounds to me that you still think that having it directly on the table with the people is definitely more helpful and or...
It gives you different information because what pandemic brings to the industry, and it brings literally one good thing and many many bad things, is online playing. Yeah, and Tabletop Simulator as a tool, or Tabletopia, because I know some people use that. This is great because when you are testing live, you will test with only a specific group of people. Yeah. It can be, I don't know, 20, 50, maybe 100. Okay, but it's still very small amount of people. So this is where watching is very important, because you know, every emotion counts. But when you run playtest using Tabletop Simulator, or better, you give the game on the Tabletop Simulator to people and they play the game ourselves without you, it's more important to get more numeric feedback. For example, when we run a campaign of Frostpunk, and I think Frostpunk is the is a game of mine that was playtested many, many times, and any other game was close to that. Because we give people access to the Frostpunk during the campaign, and we put on the TTS some questions after the game. And it was not kind of question, do you like the game or do you not like the game? No, the question was, okay, what buildings during the game? What was your choices? How many technologies you invent? What laws you introduce? And we get more than 500,000 of records of that. Wow. And yeah, those numbers were really important because, you know, if I get the numbers from live testing, and I have, I don't know, 100 tests, let's say 100, but I don't think every game is tested as many times in its final version. I have doubts about that. But even 100 tell you a lot if you see that, okay, in 10% games, something didn't happen, or people don't choose that. It's small number. It's still small number. But the Frostpunk was the first game that I have numbers, and I know that they mean something. Because really, the difference between 20% and 30% is important. It means, okay, I can do something with that.
Great. So somehow both ways of testing are important and helpful. Maybe shortly coming back to the book, besides from basic editing, did you also had a kind of testing approach for the book?
Yeah, testing a book is a little hard. But yes, I have mostly my friends and also friends from the industry and outside the industry, because for me it was important that if a person is outside the industry, she or he still can read the book and have fun with what I have wrote. So I think I sent the book in its previous form to 20 people, something like this, and I get feedback from most of them, because you know, if friends send you a book, you feel that you have to read it and give him a feedback. It was very helpful because even if I don't change that specific thing, it bring to my mind something like, okay, I have to look at this aspect, this part, because this is how people feel about it or read it.
Yeah, cool. And in general, with the testing, maybe I think more importantly for the games than for the book, how much are the publishers involved in this process?
It depends on the publisher, but I think nowadays they are heavy involved, and I think they should be, because when I testing a game as a designer, I mostly test a game itself, but when publisher test a game, they test a whole product. This is totally different thing. So I'm not creating visual aspect of a game. They create this, and it's important they can check the UI of the game, the iconography and all the stuff that I can't test myself, and they also in most cases help with testing the mechanic on the last stage, because again they have people involved, and it makes tester group bigger than if a designer tested by himself. And I think most publisher I'm working with, and it doesn't matter if we talk about Awakened Realms, Glass Cannon Unplugged, Board and Dice, Rebel Studio, they test a lot before publishing.
Okay, great. Yeah, talking about publishers, so you're a freelance designer, so you're not contracted with one or work for one publisher exclusively. And you already mentioned it briefly in the beginning. What are your greatest challenges when approaching a publisher about a new idea when you pitched yourself? I understood you sometimes got approached by the publisher, but if you have an idea, what are the challenges? And I think that's also something you cover in the book, right?
A little. As I said, nowadays it's of course a little easier for me to make publisher play my game. This is the part that is easier nowadays, and it is important for me, because as I said before, when I try to sell my game, it's really not good. So after publisher game, and from that stage, this is not important, is it my game or any else, I don't know, some new designer, because for most publisher, only about a game after that. So yeah. I think the biggest struggle on the first place is to make it happen, make somebody play your game and show somebody it. But after that, everything is in your hand, what you have done, what game you have designed, it will be good enough or not. And if it's not good enough, it's just to, you have to take two steps back and redesign it, or just go to another project and let it go when we talk about that specific game.
Okay, interesting. And if you would make a list of things you're looking for in a publisher, so is there anything that would make a perfect publisher in your opinion?
I try to, and this is also advice I give to many designers on workshop on or yeah. Different events. I think you should look for a publisher that games of that publisher you like, because if I have a publisher and as a player I think, okay, this publisher, I don't know, give me not enough thick cardboards, or I have in my opinion not very nice illustration or something like this, I really don't want to pitch my game to this publisher, because probably my game will look exactly like this. And what you don't want on your designer shelf is your own game that don't bring you joy. So go to the publisher you like, go to the publisher you admire, you think they are good in their job, you think they, I don't know, because this is also important, if you think that in any way a publisher is, I don't know, not honest or not fair to customer service, for example, don't bring your game to that publisher, because it's not worth it, really, because it will bring only bad taste in your mouth, and you will not feel great, even if you publish your game.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And when you're looking at the other side, any traits you would give new designers so they should take care of that when approaching a publisher? So what should I as a designer have traits in myself? So what should I take care of?
First of all, I think, you have to be prepared. And this this is very important when you, and I'm talking about presentation, about playtesting game. I sometimes meet mostly young designers who design their game and they want to show the game to me or to the publisher, and they say, okay, let's play. And during the play, they just try to figure out the rules. And it was like, okay, this is not a good time to do that. So yeah, it changed. You know what? I think it's a little dark here, so I try to...
I can see you again. Great.
I just look on my face. It's black. It's maybe not so bad if my face is not visible, but
it's nicer this way. Yes,
people have to believe that this is me.
Yeah. Next question, going a bit in the direction of crowdfunding. Several of your games went through crowdfunding.
Yeah.
What impact does that have on you as a designer?
Oh, I think really without crowdfunding, you will never heard about me, and I will be not here today if I have to be honest. I believe crowdfunding is important when you try to publish game that is big, that is different from what you have on the market, because and I started designing Nemesis in 2012. So yeah. It was 6 years before it was published after the Kickstarter campaign. And this was a game that without crowdfunding, it will not be published ever, because no many publishers want to risk putting that game on the market. And even if some publisher want to bring that game to life, they will make it smaller, make it from cheaper components, because they want to get as low price as it's possible, because higher price means higher risk. And crowdfunding let people make more brave game, I would say, because again, if you look at Gloomhaven, I cannot believe that this game will be published ever without crowdfunding, and many others. So of course crowdfunding have some issues, but also give to our industry a big boost, and also a lot of space for innovation, for different kind of designs.
Absolutely, yeah. Good to hear also in these times a few positive words about crowdfunding, because I absolutely see it like you do. In these campaigns for your games, how much are you involved in the campaign as such, or is this mainly done by the publisher?
Of course, publisher is mostly the side who decides about marketing and all that stuff. Because, as you know, I don't know about it anything. But I try to be involved as much as possible. I write some updates about game mechanism. We are of course thinking or creating new content, stretch goals, because in some campaigns, especially the first ones, I think Lords of Hellas was a really crazy ride, because we have no idea there will be such a success of this game. And during the campaign, we have to figure out new stretch goals and new stuff.
Okay, during the campaign, interesting.
From day to day, because really, Awaken Realms, it was second game by them. It was first big game by me, so yeah, we was surprised really, and it was crazy. So we literally was on the phone calls permanently and figuring out, okay, what can we do, what will be interesting for people. So yeah.
Cool. And what was the reason behind the decision now to do crowdfunding for the book?
Mostly to reach out to the audience, because there are many books in the world, and that's good, because I love reading books, but also. It's very hard market to bring a small book about game design, so very niche book, and crowdfunding let you publish that book if it's for small audience, because I don't believe big publishers will publish a book in the 1,000 or 2,000 copies in English language. Yeah. It's not good deal for them, and here we can do this, and this is why we use crowdfunding.
Yeah, makes sense.
Cool. And you just mentioned with Lords of Hellas designing the stretch goals during the campaign. What surprises can we expect in this campaign?
Okay, so I learned a lot from Lords of Hellas. And after that campaign, we were always prepared a little better than that time. But again, I don't know what I can tell you because I'm not the marketing guy. So we finish the interview and I will get some angry phone calls.
Yeah.
I shouldn't talk about this. You know, there will be, of course, some upgrades when we talk about all the materials and that stuff. This is obvious, but I think there will be also some surprises closer to game design itself. So, you know, when you write a book about game design, this is good to show people. Okay, this is how I design, and this is the example to the book. So maybe.
Cool. Yeah, we're looking forward to this. Okay, I guess we're getting close to the end of the interview. We at least have to try to ask you about if you could tell us anything about Nemesis Retaliation. if you could give us any spoilers or something.
You know, if I tell you any spoilers, there will be phone calls.
Yes, again.
but literally, we are working on it each day because even after this call, I will go to my other computer and make some updates on Tabletop Simulator prototype.
Okay.
Because there is a prototype.
Yes, of course.
And we play the game and try to find out how to make some best solution to some problems. The game will be much more, you know, militaristic. It will be at least it will be about shooting, not dying, or not dying as fast as in the other.
Okay.
In Retaliation, you will have a little illusion that you have the all power you need to, bring intruders down and fight with them. And of course, it will be illusion because in this case, there will be a lot more intruders than in previous Nemesis. So
of course,
maybe one cannot kill you, but you know, 10 or 12 probably will.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for those insights. Sounds really awesome. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Me too, definitely. Yeah. Then, last question. What single advice could you give to new game designers?
create your prototype as fast as possible because ideas have no value. If you have an idea of a game, you have nothing. The execution is everything because your game in your head will be the best game in the world. It will be Spiel des Jahres and all the other stuff. But when you create the prototype, this is the only way to evaluate and to check your game. So don't be, that guy who came to a bar and talk you about the great idea of a game he have, and you meet him each year, and after 10 years he still have a great idea in his head and he have no prototype. Create prototype as fast as possible and learn if your game is good or not.
Okay, that's very good advice, I guess. Thanks for sharing and thanks for your time for this very interesting interview.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for the talking. It was very nice to meet you. And probably we have opportunity to see each other in Essen this year.
Yes, definitely.
Will be there the complete time. So yeah, would be great to meet in person.
Great, great.
Super. Then, we wish you a lot of success for the campaign with the book. We are also quite interested in reading it as soon as it's delivered. So, yeah, good luck with that. And then hope to see you soon in Essen.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I think see you on the table with some board game, because this is how it should be. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
So, thanks again, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Ja, das war das Interview mit dem Adam. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Wie hat es dir gefallen, Olli?
Super, also es ist cool. Also das ist ja, glaube ich, schon eine Größe in Sachen Boardgame-Designer und das, cool. Auch einfach... Wie locker er das so runtergeredet hat. Wir haben ja vorher dann auch schon mal gesagt, hey, sollen wir dir mal so einen kurzen Überblick über die Fragen geben? Nee, das will er alles so spontan, er will sich da überraschen. Und das war schon sehr cool. Ich finde den sehr, sehr sympathisch.
Ja, ich fand auch, das war so ein ganz entspanntes Gespräch. Man hat ihn überhaupt nicht angemerkt, dass, ich meine, der hat halt einen in den Top 10, ne, einen Titel bei den BGG Top 100, auch die anderen Titel sind alle echt, echt große Dinger und sehr bekannte Titel. Und das war alles sehr, sehr natürlich, mit ihm darüber zu quatschen. Fand ich auch sehr, sehr sympathisch, ist er darüber gekommen. Ich bin mal gespannt, was noch in der Kampagne für das Buch so kommt. Er hat ja gesagt, so richtig viel darf er ja nicht sagen, jetzt wird er angerufen. Aber es klang ja schon so, dass sie sich ein paar lustige Gimmicks überlegt haben.
Ja, gut. Ihr könnt ja vielleicht mal generell sagen, weil das ist ja jetzt natürlich was Spezielles, weil es auch auf Englisch war, wie ihr das so findet, ob das ganz, ganz furchtbar ist oder ob das okay ist, weil das natürlich auch das Spektrum der Autoren oder generell Leute im Brettspiel-Business, mit denen wir mal reden könnten, auch etwas erweitert. Also gebt uns einfach mal da ein Feedback, wie ihr das fandet.
Genau, also es wird sicherlich kein grundsätzlich englischsprachiger Podcast hier, aber wenn ihr jetzt sagt, ach komm, das ist doch mal spannend, dass die Jungs mal mit irgendwem nicht deutschsprachigen reden zwischendurch, wäre das auf jeden Fall lohnendes Feedback für uns.
Ja.
Daher ja, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Ich hoffe, es hat Spaß gemacht, uns auf jeden Fall. Und dann sehen wir den Adam in Essen wohl als nächstes.
Ne? Ja.
Gut, Olli, danke dir. Ciao, ciao.
Ja, danke dir. Ciao, ciao.
Das war es auch schon wieder bei The Board Game Theory. Danke fürs Einschalten und wenn ihr mögt, hören wir uns nächste Woche schon wieder. Für Fragen, Wünsche oder Anregungen besucht gerne unseren Discord, schreibt uns auf Instagram oder per Mail an info@theboardgametheory.de oder schickt eine Postkarte. Wir würden uns außerdem darüber freuen, wenn ihr uns bei Spotify, Apple oder wo ihr uns sonst so hört, ein Abo und eine Bewertung dalasst. Vielen Dank und bis bald.